Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies.
It is a pleasure to be joined today on the Fansmanship.com podcast by Coulter Nuanez. Did I pronounce that right, Coulter?
Yeah, it's good. Coulter Nuanez. Yeah, you got it.
Nuanez. Okay, very good. Yeah, yeah. Coulter's been a writer around the Big Sky. He can tell us a little bit about himself, but went to Montana, I think, and has written for different newspapers up there, and now is a writer for SkylineSportsMT.com. So tell me a little bit about how long you've been covering the Big Sky and kind of in what context. And it sounds like you've been around the Montana schools for a really long time.
Yeah, I went to University of Montana, started covering the Grizz back in, 2006, and covered there for the student newspaper for a couple years. Then parlayed that into a job covering football, women's soccer, women's basketball for the Missoulian for about a year. And then I took a little job as a sports editor in Ellensburg, Washington, covering Central Washington, Eastern Washington, and so D2 and then a little bit of Big Sky stuff. And then about a year and a half after that, I came to Bozeman to cover Montana State for the Chronicle, Bozeman Daily Chronicle. And then about a year after into that gig, got promoted to sports editor, covered the team for a couple more years. And then 2012, split off, started an independent subscription-based website called Bobcat Beat. And in the last couple of years, we've been able to expand, and now we're, like you said, we're doing Skyline Sports, which is kind of a newspaper-style, subscription-based website covering Montana State, Montana, and the rest of the Big Sky. Obviously, the Montana schools are kind of our big go-tos, but we're going to give a lot of love to the other top teams this year, too, Eastern Washington, Cal Poly, Idaho State, teams like that.
The Big Sky is just huge. I mean, it's really the it's got to be the biggest conference in FCS, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Just in terms of amount of teams as well as the geographic reach, you know, that was kind of the reason we decided to start this thing up, is just because it's so many different regions. You got California, you got the West Coast, of Portland State, you got all the way down to Arizona, then you got the whole I-15 corridor with Pocatello and Ogden and Cedar City, and then you got the Montana schools, and then you got all the way out to North Dakota too. So big geographic reach. I think there's a lot of towns that are really hungry for the information, since it's kind of the only show in town in a lot of the Big Sky towns. So we kind of saw it as a golden opportunity.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. You know, we're always relatively focused on what's going on around here, but we want to know a little bit more about what's happening across the conference, whether it's the Big West and other sports or the Big Sky. Hey, I wanted to ask you, while you were out in the Washington places, did you ever get a chance to cover any Seattle basketball with Joe Calero?
Yeah, I covered a lot of prep stuff out there. You know, Central Washington University actually has one of the top Division II programs in the country, and they had a bunch of guys from Tacoma and Seattle. They had a couple guys from Franklin Pierce, a guy from Rainier Beach, so Seattle Prep. So we hit a lot of the Washington powerhouses. Those are fun schools to cover, man. The basketball out there is so good.
Yeah, it's really great. The basketball coach out here at Cal Poly, the reason I asked, was at Seattle before for a number of years. So,
Yes, I cover a little bit of Seattle U as well.
Yeah.
Central actually had two transfers from there when I was covering that.
There you go.
Yeah, it's kind of all intertwined out there.
Yeah, and we have probably three or four guys on the basketball team who are from that area. So back to football here. I asked this question, and last year I had Brent Wahlberg from, I think it's egrizz.com, out on the podcast before the Montana State two-game stretch that Cal Poly had. And I asked him this question. I'm going to ask pretty much everybody I talk to, you know, in terms of people who aren't here in San Luis Obispo, but how does the rest of the conference, in your estimation, view Cal Poly, you know, football wise?
I think that the conference is very weary of Cal Poly, and I think that they think they're very dangerous, just because, I mean, several different things. As you know, Cal Poly is a premier academic institution, probably one of the best public schools in the whole Western United States. And so that's such a huge draw just in terms of recruiting. And then San Luis Obispo is, I mean, maybe the most beautiful place I've ever been outside of the state of Montana. So that's a huge draw too. And like you said earlier, you know, they got the college town feel there, but you still got the California weather. So I think people are pretty weary of them just in terms of what they can build there, because they do have such good draws. They got good tradition. They've always been a really powerful school that's always given the Big Sky good competition since before they joined the league. And you know, here they are, I guess, year four in the league, and I think they're 17-7 against the Big Sky. They already got a share of a league title. So, I mean, they're the only school that's been able to break through outside of the big three of Montana, Montana State, Eastern Washington, and get a share of one of those titles. So I think just with all the factors they have playing into it, I think people have a lot of respect for them already.
Great, great. Yeah, I'm here with Colter Nuanez, like I said, from SkylineSportsMT.com. I'm gonna get that right, and I'm gonna say it a couple times because there's some good coverage in there. He had a good article on Chris Brown. I'm assuming you got to go to the Big Sky Media Weekend week, whatever, however many days it was. How was that? I've always wanted to go to that, and I always have the opportunity to, but money wise and family wise, it just doesn't line up for me most summers. Tell me about how that was and how that goes.
It's a great time, man. You get access to a lot of people, which is really good. Everybody brings all their senior administrators down there, and you got all the head coaches from all the 13 schools, and then they all bring a star player as well. So it's a lot of really good access. We were able to get enough content just in terms of feature stories. We were able to do features on all 13 teams in the Big Sky for our first couple weeks here after launching Skyline Sports. So that was cool, you know, just had to do a couple interviews on the side to kind of fill in the pieces. But, yeah, you know, good access. You get about 10, 15 minutes with every student athlete, 10 or 15 minutes with every coach. So a lot of good stuff there. And then kind of the highlight of the weekend there is the golf tournament. You know, you play in a big scramble, and it's fun because a lot of the coaches are really good golfers, but a lot of the student athletes are not. You know, it's funny getting these hyper-competitive, excellent athletes out there who've never played golf before and just watching them, you know, most of them are just absolutely terrible, and you can see just eat at them because they're so competitive, but it ends up being a pretty good time.
So were you playing with Dakota Prukup?
I actually was not. I got to put in a little special request. I've been going to the event for a few years now, so the Big Sky treats me pretty well, but I really wanted to meet the new Montana coach, Bob Stitt. So yep. I asked to meet with him, so we were able to, me and him were in a car together, and then we actually got paired with Ernest Collins Jr. and Ron Gould. The head coach of UC Davis is Gould, and then head coach of Northern Colorado is Ernest Collins Jr. So,
oh, wow.
That was pretty fun. It was actually kind of a deadline deal, so to speak. We were supposed to be with a student athlete and another sports information director, but they somehow traded out because the coaches wanted to play together. So we ended up, the four of us got paired together. That was a kick in the pants. Those guys, you know, all three of them together kind of, I mean, it's funny to watch coaches fraternize with each other because they really do, they are in the same shoes. And they do kind of commiserate with each other. It's the grind that they go through, especially when they're not playing each other. So it was a really fun day.
And not having a student athlete maybe is a little bit of a ringer group there.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we should have. If we wouldn't have missed so many putts, we would have won that son of a gun.
So last year, I got to see both Montana State and I also got to see South Dakota State. That was the one game I did travel to last year, out to South Dakota State with Cal Poly, and Cal Poly lost out at South Dakota State, and Montana State was nipped in the playoffs, I think, by South Dakota State, right?
Yep.
How good is Montana State? You know, is kind of the selection, the preseason top pick in the Big Sky, ranked pretty high nationally, top 12 or so. How good are they this year?
Well, I think the huge key for them this year is going to be exactly what it was last year. They got to fix what was broken. Last year, they had no problem scoring on people. I mean, I was going through the stats the other day. They scored at least 47 times, but they lost two of those games. So, I mean, last year in the playoffs, they scored 41 points in a driving Bozeman snowstorm at home, and they lost.
Right.
I mean, that's, you know, I mean, the old coaches of Montana lore, both at Montana and Montana State, they'd be rolling over in their graves if you told them they were going to score 41 points at home in a playoff game in the snow and lose. So, yeah. I think they know that they need, it's all about defense this year. I mean, they have almost everybody offensively back. They return all five starters on the offensive line. They return Dakota Prukup, who's probably going to be the best quarterback in the league outside of Chris Brown at Cal Poly. They got five running backs who can play. They got every single one of their receivers back from a year ago. They got a drop-down tight end from Miami who should be even an upgrade over the first team All-League guy they had last year. So offensively, they're perfectly fine. But, you know, last year they scored 40 points a game and they gave up 35. I mean, they They had to score 59 to beat Sac State by a field goal. They scored 51 at home against Eastern Washington, and they lost. So, I mean, they have to lock in. They ought to figure out a way. I mean, even if they can give up 28 points a game, that would be a vast improvement from last year. And I think that would put them right in control there of the league race. But, again, you know, they lose almost all their starters from last year, which could be actually a good thing just because those guys were so banged up and they ran through the ringer so hard last year. But
yeah.
Just in terms of fixing things, I mean, they've taken all the steps to fix that defense. They hired a new defensive coordinator. They hired a new cornerbacks coach. I mean, they were third to last in the country in pass defense last year. So hired a new cornerbacks coach, and they brought in 7 transfers on the defensive side of the ball as well. So a bunch of new faces, a whole new scheme. I guess we'll see. I guess time will tell to see if it works. But it looks like they've at least made the first steps to making the changes they need to make.
Yeah, that's what really makes, you know, college football fun is year to year just not being sure, I think, sometimes. And having new guys, but still, you know, just not being sure. That's the beauty of the preseason, right, is that we get to talk about it. Hey, the kid from Miami, is that Bo? Is that the...
Bo Sandlin, yeah, he's a California kid. He went to Pierce College,
there
in L.A.
Actually, random story and connection. He ran track for a year at his high school for my college roommate, who's the track coach at Simi High.
Oh, wow.
So there you go, random. Idaho State last year. I want to get into kind of surprise teams because Idaho State last year was kind of a surprise up and comer. Their offense was always really good, I think. 2 years ago when they played at Cal Poly and lost, you could tell that their passing offense was really good, and getting them up on that carpet up in Idaho in that arena they have up there is no joke either. Tell me who maybe is the Idaho State of this year, or is there one in the conference? Somebody who's kind of going to be an up-and-coming team, you know, and maybe taking a step forward into the, you know, real contenders kind of inner circle here.
I think that the top 4 teams in the league are going to remain the same: Montana, Montana State, Eastern Washington, Cal Poly. Not in that order, but those will be the top 4. But I think that the fifth team, along with Idaho State, that's going to be battling for that third or fourth playoff spot out of the Big Sky is going to be Southern Utah.
Okay.
They're a team a lot of people are sleeping on because it's really hard to gauge their program unless you follow them closely like I do. They have such a unique situation with the LDS mission that they go on. So BYU, Utah State, Utah, they also have this prevalence of Mormon missionaries. But a lot of those schools, they want you to come to school for a year, redshirt, and then go on your mission.
Right.
And so they always want you to do it right afterwards. And they use that basically to get an evaluation of you in your first year there. And then if you don't hack it, so to speak, they don't invite you back. But because you're going on a religious mission, you essentially become a free agent after your mission is done. So say you commit to BYU, and after a year, now you're a free agent. That's how Southern Utah ended up with Ammon Olsen, the quarterback. He was originally at BYU. He comes back from his mission. He goes back to BYU for a minute, realizes he's not going to hack it. Boom, now he's at Southern Utah. But anyway, Southern Utah is a school. They don't make you go on a mission at any time. You can go on a mission at any time. It's your choosing. So you can play for a year, 2 years, 3 years, as many years as you want, and you can go on a mission and then come back. So that's a really unique thing that they've found. But I guess the point that I'm getting at is a couple years ago, they made the playoffs. They were the 4th team out of the Big Sky that made the playoffs. They had a big win up here in Bozeman, upset Montana State. And then they lost a bunch of those guys to missions.
Uh-huh.
Zach Browning, who was the newcomer of the league in 2012, he went on a mission. Chinny Ahonadu, who was their middle linebacker last year, he's about to go on a mission this year. But they return a bunch of guys from missions this next year. And so Ed Lamb's been there for 8 years now. He was telling me this is going to be the first senior class that they've had since he's been there. They're all his recruits. First time they've ever had all his recruits. So they're going to have a bunch of upperclassmen. They got James Couser, who I think is the best defensive player in the whole entire league at defensive end. On linebacker, they're going to get Matt Hawley back. He's the guy who I thought was the best outside linebacker in the league 2 years ago. He blew out his knee last year, so he's going to be back. And then they got 2 NFL guys in the secondary in Miles Kilbrew and Mashawn Sims. So I think defensively, they're going to be a lot stouter than they were a year ago. Last year, they were last in the Big Sky in total defense. I think they're going to be a lot stouter this year on that side of the ball. The other thing that I think is going to really help them is they got to the playoffs using a ball control offense that really wanted to grind the clock. And then their offensive coordinator, he abruptly left the Weber State when Jay Hill was hired. And so they had to scramble, and they hired Gary Crouton, who wanted to run a very open, up-tempo, spread-style offense.
Right.
And they really waffled the first month of the season because they had incumbent quarterback with Aaron Cantu, who was the guy who led them to the playoffs. But then they have this drop down from BYU and Ammon Olsen. Well, they kind of dinked around. They go 0-4 in the non-conference. They piled up a bunch of injuries, and that coupled with the fact that they didn't really have an identity offensively, well, then they change, they lock in, and they start throwing the ball all over the place. They ended up finishing decently strong. I think they went 3-5 in the league, but Olsen put up a bunch of huge numbers. But I think this year, just having that identity offensively is going to really help them. I think they're going to be able to score on people, and I think they'll be at least a little bit better defensively than they were a year ago.
Yeah. And you know Cal Poly went there last year, or they didn't go there. Southern Utah came to Cal Poly last year, and Cal Poly handled them. But that's, you know, it's always hard to kind of play on the road in this conference, and we know that's not easy. It'll be interesting to see what Southern Utah does. I remember that game in the first quarter anyway, was one of those games that looked like maybe you just go up and down the field, back and forth, like that UC Absolutely. Davis game that you talked about. And really, I feel like kind of half the games in the Big Sky are like that, right? I mean, isn't that kind of the calling card of this conference? Is that?
Oh, man. I mean, going through the numbers is just ridiculous. They had 6 of the top 10 offensive teams in the country last year were in the Big Sky.
Right.
I mean, Montana State shattered their school record for points in the season. They scored 496 points last year,
right.
Averaged just shy of 40 a game. Right. And they were 4th in the league in scoring.
Right.
I mean, look at a team like Sac. They averaged 40 points a game last year, and they went 7-5.
Yeah,
I mean, you had. I think you had 5 teams that averaged over 32 a game. I think you had 6 teams that averaged over 475 yards a game. So, yeah, I mean, the way that this league is, I think it's not to go on a tangent too much, but I think it's a product of just the fracturing college football in the West. You know, you have the Pac-12, the Mountain West, and then the Big Sky is basically the third league. So your skilled players all throughout California and the West Coast. I mean, you got guys that are borderline Mountain West, borderline Pac-12 players that are playing at all these schools. So you got weapons all across the board. And I think that's just catered to these explosive offenses so much so far in the Big Sky.
Definitely. I wanted to go there and talk about offenses with you, and I think now's a good time to do it. You know, around Cal Poly, there is, and I think it's probably a vocal minority of fans who aren't a big fan of, triple option football, who aren't a big fan of the running game and handing it off and handing it off and handing it off and handing it off again. And I'm definitely not one of those people who's an opponent of it. I actually enjoy a team that scores, 35 or 40 points a game, and leads the country in rushing yards and, controls the ball like they do. But it's a question I have for somebody who's an outsider, what kind of an advantage is that? But also for somebody who's been following, the football at this level for so long, can a triple option team really eventually be a viable national championship contender in your estimation?
That is a very interesting question, because I think the two teams that have the best niche right now in this league offensively are Cal Poly and Montana State. There's a little bit of a misnomer in Montana State because they run such an up-tempo pace and they play they rely on big plays so much, but at the end of the day, they're a triple option team as well. They just run the triple option out of the spread. They're running kind of what Gus Malzahn got going at Auburn. I mean, they're running the option out
more
of the
passing,
spread.
Right?
And they, I mean, they run pass options on a lot of plays, and that's how they hit so many big plays.
Right.
And I mean, if you look at Prukop, Dakota Prukop, his stats last year, he threw for about 2,500 yards. But I would venture to guess that probably 15 of his 21 touchdowns were for more than 40 yards on, fake option plays where then he hit a receiver or a guy on a wheel route. So, I mean, their pass game is completely set up by the run game.
Right. Let me ask the question this way. Can a traditional triple option team like Cal Poly, is that something in your estimation, that can be a viable national championship contender at some point?
I think that the issue that you're going to run into with when you're running the triple option, especially when you've got a guy who's as good at operating it as Chris Brown is you can't keep your quarterback safe. When you're running what Montana State runs, they can take the ball out of Prukop's hands a little bit just by the stuff that they call. But Chris Brown, he's making a read on every single play. And if the defense decides to let Chris Brown be the ball carrier, he's going to be the ball carrier. And I think that you'd probably agree. The thing that kind of thwarted their season down the stretch was just the fact that he had so many carries. I mean, he got worn out. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking he had, what, 39, 40 carries? And then, you know, then the next week they go out and lose to Davis because I think he was just broken. So
yeah.
I think that's the big issue there is how do you – when you have a guy that's as important as him, and I think he's probably the most important player in the entire conference of what the teams want to do, how do you keep him healthy? And I think that's going to be the biggest obstacle towards winning a national title.
Yeah, and when you talk about you know, last year, I sat down with Tim Walsh and did like a 40-minute podcast on a Friday, and his, you know, big thing about the offense was how they have to spread the ball around and not, you know, not feed the ball to one guy or the other guy, you know, exclusively, and how they have to, you know, really balance it out. And that was on a Friday morning. And I think on Saturday night was when all the when the four players got arrested, that, you know, that the legal trouble and all that happened here at Cal Poly. And one of those guys was Christian Ivory, who was the, you know, leading returning rusher and a guy who was really expecting to take, who Cal Poly was expecting to take a lot of that load and shoulder it. And a lot of that got transferred over onto Chris Brown. I think when you're talking about what, and I'm going to talk to Tim Walsh actually tomorrow, but when you talk about a lot of what they want to do wasn't what they were actually able to do, and they just kind of had to ride him, I think, you know, more than they really wanted to. I think it'll be interesting to see with a number of running backs now who you know, it'll be interesting to see who Tim Walsh trusts and who they're able to, you know, force feed the ball to who isn't Chris Brown when you're talking about the running game, because you're exactly right. When your quarterback is that dynamic, you don't want him to carry it, you know, 20 or 30 times a game. You want him to rush it like 12 times for 85 yards or something. You know, not you don't really want to have anybody in the triple option, I don't think, rushing the ball more than, you know, maybe 20 times. You know, you want it to be a challenge to figure out who's going to get the ball. And I just don't think it was as much when it came to Garcia Brown last year. You know, it might have been because of necessity, but that's just kind of the way that last year kind of moved forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And you saw it last year too, just in terms of what the defense chooses to take away.
Right.
When, you know, when they played Montana was dead set on not giving Garcia very many big plays. They were dead set on smearing that dive, but then that let Chris Brown get loose for, you know, whatever, over 200 yards.
Right.
And it's the same thing with Montana State. They were dead set on not letting the dive kill him. And then Brown and Garcia were the ones that hurt him. So
right.
It's kind of pick your poison. But again, it's, you know, it's all about keeping those guys healthy, because you're going to have all the cogs of the offense to be able to
Which kind of brings up the other interesting thing, and I'll ask Walsh about it tomorrow. But you know, Cal Poly has a senior backup quarterback who came from Air Force and just kind of hasn't got off the schneid. Started a couple games a couple years ago. I think started up at Montana when Cal Poly almost beat him up there a couple of years ago. Dano Graves, who's small but kind of runs the more traditional, kind of isn't quite as dynamic, but probably is a little bit sneakier with the football, and is definitely a little bit chippy out there. It'll be interesting to see what Cal Poly does with him. There's talk of him maybe redshirting this year so that he can come back next year, because Tim Walsh really likes him. There's talk of, you know, him. I mean, people have asked about him playing another position even for a couple of years now. 3 years ago, Cal Poly had a huge quarterback logjam that Chris Brown kind of has emerged from after a year and a half or so. But it'll be interesting to see what Dano does as well. I want to ask you this Montana question. Montana State is ranked one notch higher than Montana in the polls. And you're a guy who's up there. You're a Montana alum. I'm going to have you finish this sentence for me. Montana State is better than Montana because...
Program stability. Montana State's had the same coach for 9 years. Montana is on their, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4th coach since 2009 alone. Montana's coming off probation. They're coming off a lot of NCAA sanctions. But at the end of the day, I think a lot of Grizz fans would tell you that Montana has beaten the Cats 2 years in a row, and they won a playoff game last year, and the Cats didn't. So although the preseason hype might be better, at the end of the day, I think the Grizzlies have an argument that they're the best program in the state.
And does Montana go to Montana State this year?
Montana comes to Bozeman, yes.
Right, okay. So another kind of semi-advantage in that direction, okay. And I was looking at Montana State's schedule, and it's a lot like Cal Poly's schedule was like 3 years ago. You know, they avoid some tough teams, and they get a lot of tough teams at home that they do play in the conference. You know, schedule is always a factor. I want you to finish this sentence as well, or fill in the blank. Cal Poly has to do what to compete or to be serious contenders in the Big Sky this year?
They got to replace those two savages they had at linebacker last year, first and foremost. I thought Cameron Onko and Dick Dubnar were two of the five best players in the entire league, and they were such tone setters for Cal Poly. I think they really helped Cal Poly play the tough and intimidating style that they did. That's why they were able to beat both Montana schools in those slugfests, was because of those guys, I thought. But I think just overall defensively they have a lot of question marks. But I think if they could answer those, because they can control the ball so well offensively, I think they could definitely be a contender.
Yeah, Tim Walsh likes to keep the ball. He doesn't like to turn it over. I think Cal Poly turned it over 7 times last year. It'll be interesting to see if they take more chances, to me. I mean, I think when you're playing on the road, when you're playing against really good teams, you know, you have a senior quarterback, and maybe you trust him to take a couple more shots down the field a game than you did last year. One big returner, if he can get healthy, is Willie Tucker for Cal Poly, who's a big play threat, who can, you know, who's a legitimate wide receiver threat, whether it's over the middle or deep as well. You know, a guy who caught touchdowns in places, I think, like Colorado State and Fresno State, when he was still healthy, you know, is definitely a guy who can play against anybody. And Chris Brown was a real big fan of Willie Tucker when Willie Tucker was healthy a couple years ago. He flirted, I guess, with an Oregon school, was the report, but then came back here, and you know, hopefully his knee's getting better and he can contribute there, because if he's there, then Cal Poly has, you know, sets that they can play with, you know, three wide receivers maybe, and maybe mix something up, just something to make the other team prepare for, that's not, you know, that traditional triple option. And I think Chris Brown's dynamic enough. It'll just be a matter of, you know, how much does Walsh trust him? And this is a question I'm going to have for Tim tomorrow. How much does Walsh trust him to go down the field or to do some kind of higher risk, higher reward kinds of plays? And how much does Cal Poly want to kind of, you know, go out of their comfort zone a little bit and go for something like that? I think that'll be an interesting dynamic, especially early on, as Cal Poly has just a brutal schedule on in the season. At Montana, Arizona State, home against, I think it's Northern Illinois, is that right? Yeah, I think so. And then and then away again at Montana State. So that'll be a brutal first four games there. Couple of other questions. So Cal Poly had Montana and Montana State back to back last year here in SLO, and appreciated all the fans that came. It was a fun group, I think, of people who travel with the team. When we go back there, when Cal Poly goes back there, what can they expect? I know Washington Grizzly Stadium is something that I talked a lot with Brent last year about, but how about Bobcat Stadium? What's the atmosphere like there? And it's going to be kind of, hopefully still warm. I think it's still going to be September when Cal Poly goes there. So what can they expect when they head up to Bobcat Stadium in Bozeman?
Well, I will say Washington Grizzly will be a good warm-up for Bobcat Stadium, because that's an even more hostile environment, no doubt. But Washington Grizzlies is about as loud as it gets, just because the stands are so close to the field. There's no track or anything like that. So, and just the acoustics with it based up against the mountain, that's a huge deal as well. And you get super loud there. So that'll be a good warm up for them. But Bobcat Stadium, it's gotten there. You know, they did a huge renovation back before the 2011 season. They expanded it, and they can hold about 19,000 fans now. And, you know, they've been top three in the country in attendance the last few years. So it's not going to be quite on par with Washington Grizzly, but it'll definitely be a raucous environment.
Got it. Who's the best player in the Big Sky this year?
Who is the best player in the Big Sky? I would say James Kauser is the best pro prospect and probably the best individual talent. I mean, anytime you break Jared Allen's single season record like he did last year with 10 points per loss, that's saying something. And he only needs to have an average season this next year to break all of Allen's career records too. So I think from a production standpoint, individual standpoint, gotta say James Kauser.
Got it. And when the season's all said and done, I know you've done a preview and you can read it on your website at skylinesportsmt.com. But when all is said and done, what's the how many teams does the Big Sky get into the playoffs, and what are the order of those teams?
I think that the Big Sky is going to get three teams into the playoffs. I think it'll be Montana State, Eastern Washington, and Cal Poly.
Okay, so Montana's going to get left out.
I believe so, yes. I think this will be a hard year for the Grizzlies in transition. I think that the beginning part of their schedule with North Dakota State, Cal Poly, Liberty, and then rolling into conference with Northern Arizona, and then a finish with at Idaho State, home against Eastern, and then at Montana State.
Yeah.
I mean, those six games there, I mean, if they split them, they'll be lucky. I think 3-3 is realistic there.
There's just no break.
I think they're going to have a really hard time adjusting to the new offensive scheme. I mean, they're going from running a pro-style offense in the last 3 years, flush with fullbacks and tight ends, to running this quick-hitting air raid-style offense under Bob Stitt. They moved, I mean, a lot of their best players were their tight ends and their fullbacks, and they moved those guys all out to receiver or cut them. So I think the transition there, coupled with the fact that they don't have any elite talent at quarterback, and they probably have the weakest offensive line they've had in 20 years. I think all those factors, plus the brutal schedule, I think they're going to struggle to get the 6 or 7 wins this year.
Yeah, there's just no break, right? I mean, there's no break in this conference. How many losses does a first place team have? What do you think? 1 or 2 at least?
I think Montana State to lose in Flagstaff, and I think that the home game against Cal Poly is going to be a toss-up. Montana State defense is going to have to be ready. That'll be their first. That'll be their first test of the conference schedule. They do have Eastern in the non-conference, but right. I think that Montana State has a couple of losable games on their schedule.
Yeah,
at NAU, at Idaho State, the Grizzly game is always a toss-up. I think Cal Poly could give them a run, and Eastern could give them a run too. But I think the Cats go 9-2. So I think one league loss probably.
One league loss. Okay.
But maybe two.
So that's, I mean, that's always the target is like, okay, can we only lose one in league? But, you know, I think when Cal Poly won it, maybe everybody had 1 or 2 losses. I think everybody might've had 2 losses a couple of years ago when they split it 3 ways. It's just always really interesting and you're never really out of it until the last 2 or 3 weeks of the season. And really it always comes down to that. So it'll be really interesting to see. The Big Sky season's coming up here. It starts this weekend with the big game between at Washington Grizzly Stadium, right?
Yep.
What day is that game on?
Saturday afternoon, Montana, North Dakota State.
Yeah, it's gonna be a barn burner, man. And I'm really looking forward to sitting back and watching that as college football season begins. And Coulter, I'm really hoping that you'll come on sometime in between Cal Poly playing Montana and Cal Poly playing Montana State. And hopefully, you know, we won't be going over too many injuries. Cal Poly's going out to Arizona State. I'm hoping the same thing doesn't happen to him there that happened to him a couple years ago at Fresno State, where they, you know, they lost a couple guys. I think them staying healthy through the first 3 or 4 games of the season is going to be a huge story for this team, you know, as they go into Montana State, you know, in there for their fourth game. Their health is going to be a huge factor in that case, as it always is. And we know that that's part of the fun of playing the games and playing out the season. So I really appreciate you coming on. And I recommend everybody, you can follow Coulter on Twitter at Bobcat Beat. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. At Bobcat_Beat, or you can follow us too at Skyline Sports as well. So okay. Yeah, two Twitters going now.
Nice. Nice. And I saw that, that one of the photographers there also has the same last name as you.
Yep. That's my brother Brooks. So okay. He's the business guy, the marketing guy, and the photo guy.
Okay. Nice. Nice. I get to be all of it here at fansmanship.com. So, It's all kinds of fun, and that's probably why we don't have as much business and marketing as we probably should. But there you go. Nice to have a buddy. Nice to have your brother involved as well, and he takes great shots. Let him know I said that. All right, cool. Well, I really appreciate you joining us, and good luck this year. Have fun, and hopefully I'll get to talk to you, like I said, sometime in those first, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the season.
Absolutely. Call anytime.
Cool. Thanks, Coulter.
Yeah, thanks, Owen.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true.
so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. Signs out.